Thank you all for being here tonight. It's a pleasure to be here with all of you. We've got some good parallels going on today. Rick, this morning, preached about Jesus on the cross. I want to talk a little bit about the person who made the decision to put him there, Pontius Pilate. You can turn your Bibles over to John chapter 18, and I want to talk a little bit about how we make choices and what we do when it seems like every option available to us is bad. Before we get into what the Gospels have to say about Pilate, I want to talk a little bit about what secular history teaches us about Pilate. Pilate's kind of interesting in that we do have secular historical accounts of his existence, that he was the governor of Judea from about 27 AD to about 37 AD, but we don't know anything about him before or after that. I assume this is probably the most important position he ever held in the Roman government. He shows up in 27 AD. He disappears in 37 AD. How he got appointed to governor of Judea, what he might have done after that, we have no idea. We also know about the Pilate Stone, which is a stone that was discovered in 1961 that basically is recorded or was attributed to him and mentions him by name. So another source that we know he was a real person outside of just the Bible. As governor of Judea, Pilate was in charge of basically the entire area of what we think of as Israel. On behalf of the Roman government, he was in charge of stuff like minting coins, collecting taxes, enforcing military presence and keeping the local population under Roman control. And as most important to us tonight, he was also in part of the local judicial system, which meant that he had the power to hand out capital punishment, something that the Jews themselves did not have at this time. We know that Judea, that he was in charge of, was a bit of a trouble region for the Roman government. It's about 40 years after this, there would be armed conflict between the Jewish people and the Romans that would result in the destruction of the temple and much of the city of Jerusalem. Even in Pilate's time, we know of a few incidents that occurred. According to Josephus, who's a Jewish historian who also recorded some things about Jesus, he's one of the primary sources outside of the Bible that Jesus was a real person as well. Pilate erected images of Caesar within Jerusalem at night and upset the local population there. He also used money from the temple treasury to build an aqueduct in Jerusalem, which resulted in a mob forming, which he had to put down violently. We also know Barabbas was in jail at the time for being an insurrectionist, which suggests some sort of trouble between the Jewish and Roman people. Pilate was eventually removed from being governor of Judea after a violent conflict with some Samaritans. He was sent back to Rome to explain himself to the emperor, but before he ever arrived there, the emperor died. We don't know what happened to him after that. It wasn't uncommon for the new emperor to throw out all the cases of the old emperor in that time, so he might have gotten off scot-free. He might have ended up facing trial for what he did. We don't know. So just some observations from all this. We know that Pilate was put in charge of an unhappy Roman province, that there was conflict between him and the Jewish people throughout his reign, and that it was on a recurring basis. There were several incidents that ended up becoming violent. Now, going on to the Gospels in John chapter 18, I'm going to read in just a moment from verse 28. But before that, just for some context, this is the morning after Jesus has been arrested in the garden. And he spent all night being tried by the Jews, who eventually find him guilty for all sorts of false charges they brought against him. They have a problem, however, in that, as we already established, they cannot legally deliver capital punishment. They can't crucify him themselves as much as they might want to. Only Pilate can do that, so they have to go to him and ask that he condemn Jesus. So I'll start reading in John chapter 18, verse 28. Then they led Jesus from the house of Caiaphas to the governor's headquarters. It was early morning. They themselves did not enter the governor's headquarters, so that they would not be defiled, but could eat Passover. So Pilate went outside to them and said, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" They answered him, "If this man were not doing evil, we would not have delivered him over to you." Pilate said to them, "Take him yourselves and judge him by your own law." The Jews said to him, "It is not lawful for us to put anyone to death." This was to fulfill the word that Jesus had spoken, to show by what kind of death he was going to die. So Pilate entered his headquarters again and called Jesus and said to him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus answered, "Do you say this of your own accord, or did others say it to you about me?" Pilate answered, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you over to me. What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have been fighting, that I might not be delivered over to the Jews. But my kingdom is not from the world." Then Pilate said to him, "So you are a king." Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. For this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice." Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" Here we see Pilate's first interrogation of Jesus, and we establish the choice that Pilate is faced with. He can either release Jesus, or he can condemn him to be crucified as a criminal. Pilate will say immediately after this, and several other times throughout the day, that he finds no guilt in Jesus. In fact, his first move is to try and release him, but the Jews, every time he tries, continue to apply more and more pressure to him to get their way. This provides us with an opportunity to find out just how far Pilate is willing to go to do what he knows is the right thing. Before he has to make that decision, though, Pilate tries to dodge responsibility multiple times. The first thing he says to the Jews is to try him yourself. Don't bother me with this. When they won't do it, he tries to send Jesus over to Herod and to let him deal with it, which we can read about in Luke 23, starting in verse 6. When Pilate heard this, he asked whether the man was a Galilean. And when he learned that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him over to Herod, who was himself in Jerusalem at that time. When Herod saw Jesus, he was very glad, for he had long desired to see him, because he had heard about him and was hoping to see some sign done by him. So he questioned him at some length, but he made no answer. The chief priests and scribes stood by, vehemently accusing him, and Herod with his soldiers treated him with contempt and mocked him. Then, arraying him in splendid clothing, he sent him back to Pilate. And Herod and Pilate became friends with each other that very day, for before this they had been at enmity with each other. Pilate then called together the chief priests and the rulers and the people, and said to them, "You brought me this man as one who was misleading the people. And after examining him before you, behold, I do not find this man guilty of any of your charges against him. Neither did Herod, for he sent him back to us. Look, nothing deserving death has been done by him. I will therefore punish and release him." When Pilate is faced with the hard choice of what he should do with Jesus, he tries to make no choice and to force someone else to choose for him. He does this several times, but each time the choice is given back to him. He can't dodge responsibility for it. He does try another time in Matthew 27, starting in verse 15. Now at the feast, the governor was accustomed to release for the crowd any one prisoner whom they wanted. And when they had a notorious prisoner called Barabbas. So when they had gathered, Pilate said to them, "Whom do you want me to release for you, Barabbas or Jesus who is called Christ?" For he knew that it was out of envy that they had delivered him up. Besides, while he was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent word to him, "Have nothing to do with that righteous man, for I have suffered much because of him today in a dream." Now the chief priests and the elders persuaded the crowd to ask for Barabbas and destroy Jesus. The governor again said to them, "Which of the two do you want me to release for you?" And they said, "Barabbas." Pilate said to them, "Then what shall I do with Jesus who is called Christ?" They all said, "Let him be crucified." And he said, "Why? What evil has he done? But they shouted all the more, let him be crucified. Pilate tries to get the crowd to ask for Jesus' release. But this attempt is foiled by the Jewish leadership, who rile the crowd up to ask for Barabbas instead. So at this time, Pilate is out of outs. He doesn't have any other ways to get someone else to make the decision of what he should do with Jesus for him. We also establish here that Pilate is aware that the Jews have done this out of envy. He knows Jesus hasn't committed any of the crimes they're accusing him with, or that if he has, they aren't deserving of death. We also hear that Pilate's wife is telling him not to get involved with Jesus, that she's apparently had some sort of dream about him, is telling him, have nothing to do with this. So we have Pilate faced with this choice. On one hand, he knows Jesus has done nothing wrong. He knows he's been set up. His own wife is telling him to just drop it. On the other hand, the Jews continually apply pressure. They rile up the crowds. They demand that he do something about Jesus. They'll eventually threaten to go to Caesar with the matter if he doesn't condemn Jesus. We get Pilate's ultimate choice back in John 19. We also get Pilate's last conversation with Jesus, starting in verse 1 of John 19. Then Pilate took Jesus and flogged him, and the soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head and arrayed him in a purple robe. They came up to him, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews," and struck him with their hands. Pilate went out again and said to them, "See, I am bringing him out to you, that you may know that I find no guilt in him." So Jesus came out, wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. Pilate said to them, "Behold the man." When the chief priests and the officers saw him, they cried out, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" Pilate said to him, "Take him yourselves and crucify him, for I find no guilt in him." The Jews answered him, "We have a law, and according to that law, he ought to die, because he has made himself the Son of God." When Pilate heard this statement, he was even more afraid. He entered his headquarters again and said to Jesus, "Where are you from?" But Jesus gave him no answer. So Pilate said to him, "You will not speak to me. Do you not know that I have the authority to release you and the authority to crucify you?" Jesus answered, "You would have no authority over me at all unless it had been given you from above. Therefore, he who delivered me over to you has the greater sin." Now, this seems like the first time Pilate has heard the charge that Jesus has claimed to be the Son of God. Or at least, if it isn't, it's the first time it's really sunk in with him, because he has a pretty strong reaction to it. He brings Jesus back inside and begins questioning him about his past, about how he ended up here. And actually, the first thing in verse 12 is that from then on, Pilate sought to release him. What this suggests to me is that Pilate might have believed him, or at the very least, he suspected there was more to Jesus than just an ordinary man, whether he thought he was a prophet or the Messiah, or even really understood what that meant, we don't know. But he does have a reaction when he hears them say, "This man claimed to be the Son of God." So now we have everything we said before. Plus, maybe he thinks Jesus really is God on one hand, and the Jews' continual pressure to crucify him on the other. I also think it's important to look at what Jesus says to him just before Pilate makes his decision. Because sometimes I think we can read the story of Pilate and think, well, God intended for all of this to happen. You know, Jesus knew what was going to happen before he ever went to Jerusalem. So this is what God wants, right? Like, is Pilate really making the wrong choice when he eventually chooses to crucify him? Is he even really making a choice at all if this was all in God's plan? But read with me what Jesus says to him in verse 11. "You would have no authority over me at all unless it had been given you from above. Therefore, he who delivered me over to you has the greater sin." Now, what Jesus doesn't say to him is that, "Therefore, he who delivered me over to you has all the sin," or that, "Therefore, you have no sin." Pilate. He says, therefore, he who delivered me over to you has the greater sin, which implies Pilate still has some sin in this situation. It implies Pilate still has a choice, that he could stop this if he wanted to. Jesus says, you've been given authority over me in this situation. If you wanted to stop it, you could. He tells him, you have the responsibility and the consequences of whatever your choice is, one way or another. Now I'll read verses 12 through 16 of John 19, where we get Pilate's choice. From then on, Pilate sought to release him, but the Jews cried out, if you release this man, you are not Caesar's friend. Everyone who makes himself a king opposes Caesar. So when Pilate heard these words, he brought Jesus out and sat down on the judgment seat at a place called the Stone Pavement, and in Aramaic, Gabbatha. Now it was the end of preparation for the Passover. It was about the sixth hour. He said to the Jews, behold your king. They cried out, away with him, away with him, crucify him. Pilate said to him, shall I crucify your king? The chief priests answered, we have no king but Caesar. So he delivered him over to them to be crucified. So Pilate ultimately makes the wrong choice. He allows the Jews' political pressure to get to him. Their final card that they play of threatening to go to Caesar and to somehow say that Pilate has rebelled, I guess, by allowing Jesus to live and claim he is some sort of king. That scares Pilate enough that he ultimately caves in and allows the Jews to crucify Jesus. Now, I just want to contrast Pilate really quickly with some other people from the Old Testament who are given a choice that on the surface doesn't seem similar, but really I think is. You don't have to turn here, but in Daniel 3, verses 13 through 18. The Nebuchadnezzar, in furious rage, commanded that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said to them, is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I have set up? Now, if you are ready, when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, to fall down and worship the image that I have made, well and good. But if you do not worship, you shall be immediately cast into the burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve the gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. So we're all familiar with the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Nebuchadnezzar commands that everyone, whenever they hear music, should worship this golden image that he's set up. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego refuse to do it, which eventually gets reported to Nebuchadnezzar. And he gives them the choice. Bow down and worship the image right now in front of me, or immediately be cast into a fiery furnace. The question I want to ask is, why do Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego end up making the right choice in the situation? We know that after this, they refuse to bow down. They are thrown into the fiery furnace. But when they are, a fourth man appears with them, and they walk out of the furnace completely unharmed, and they actually end up getting a promotion out of all of this. Whereas Pilate makes the wrong choice and crucifies Jesus. They're both groups are faced with the choice of doing, on one hand, what they know is right, and on the other hand, facing some sort of earthly consequences or some sort of threat from an external group. And really, when you think about it, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego have it off way worse than Pilate does in this situation. They are completely at Nebuchadnezzar's mercy. You know, when Pilate is faced with the Jews, the threats he's faced with are, well, we'll go and tell Caesar, or we'll start a riot. Things that Pilate probably had the ability to deal with. You know, if they had started a riot, he has military forces that he can call to deal with that. If they report him to Caesar, he can go and try and explain himself. When you contrast that with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, their choice is bow down and worship or immediately be burned alive. You know, they're much worse off. They're much more powerless in this situation than Pilate is. Yet they end up making the right choice, whereas Pilate doesn't. Now, to try and answer why they made the right choice, I want to turn to our last passage, which is James chapter 4, verses 13 through 17. James 4, 13 through 17. Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow, we will go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make a profit. Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. So whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, for him it is sin. You know, for a long time, this passage confused me. Because the last sentence seems pretty disconnected with everything that comes before it. You know, the first part is James talking about don't worry or plan for tomorrow because everything is in the hand of God. But then this last verse is something about doing what is right. You know, what does that have to do with everything that just came before it? And the answer is, I think it has everything to do with what just came before it. We hear a lot in the New Testament, Jesus will talk about, don't worry about tomorrow, don't be anxious. You know, all Solomon in his glory wasn't clothed like one of these lilies, and God looks after them, so trust that he'll look after you. And we hear in Ecclesiastes about how, like, all is vanity and life is just a vapor that appears for a little while. And it sounds here like it might be talking about either of these things. But I think what it's really trying to emphasize is that we don't know the future. Only God does. And so whatever consequences we might be afraid would come from doing the right thing, we don't really know if those consequences are real or not, do we? Pilate was worried about all the things he would do if he didn't crucify Jesus. But Pilate didn't know if any of those threats were real. He didn't know if the Jews could carry them out. He didn't know if the consequences would ever come, if they even did carry them out. He didn't know the future, but he thought he did, and he boasted in his arrogance. And because of that, he ended up doing the wrong thing, and for him it was sin. Whereas Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they knew that Nebuchadnezzar had threatened to throw them into the fiery furnace, and that for most times people get thrown into a fiery furnace, they die. But they also knew that they didn't know the future. They knew that only God did. And they said, all right, so maybe you'll throw us into the fiery furnace. And if we die there, then we'll die serving God. And we're okay with that. But maybe that isn't what will happen. Because we don't know what will happen, but God does. And we trust that he has our best interests in mind. They knew that no one knows what will happen tomorrow, that their lives are just a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. And so when we know what we don't know, the only thing we can really do is to do the right thing and to trust that God will take care of the rest. So whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, for him it is sin. Because we don't truly know what the consequences of either choice will be. So we can only try to do what we know is right. Now, despite all of this, all of us have done wrong in our lives. But Jesus has offered us a way to wash ourselves clean of those sins. If you'd like to do so, or if there's anything else we can help you with tonight, I invite you to come forward as we stand and sing.